Hello, this is a spoiler alert episode.
Number four. Star Trek, Into Spoiler.
Into Spoiler Darkness. So if you have not seen Star Trek and you don't want to hear intimate details of all of it, do not listen anymore. Take this out.
Especially the bullshit parts.
Especially the dumb crap. All right. So it is myself and myself and Graham Elwood. It's Chris Mancini and Graham Elwood.
Wow, there's another person just came in.
We don't have a guest.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd bring in
with the same name as you. That was weird.
I'd bring in one of my split personalities in here. This is Graham Elwood and Chris Mancini. We're going to do Star Trek Into Darkness, spoiler alert number four. All right. So.
Well, like we said before, we both did like this movie.
We both did like this movie.
Yeah. But I was thinking about it. You know, the thing that bothered me about it is that the more I thought about the movie, the dumber parts got even dumber. Like, I was starting to get even, like, angrier at the dumb parts. And it wasn't even that I think I was angry that they were dumb, but I think I was angrier at the fact that this was a missed opportunity to really make something smart and cool and great, where you have a good movie but could have been great and fantastic. You could have had Wrath of Khan here instead of remaking Wrath of Khan.
Well, that was the
you could
thing.
Have had
okay,
Wrath of Khan.
Let's get into that. Let's get into the ending where they basically took that scene from Wrath of Khan
and
where
switched the characters.
They just did a mirror image where Spock was, you know, he was in the radioactive room in Wrath of Khan. It's that great touching scene between these two guys who have been, at that point, you know, they'd been working together
for years.
So it was this really like, oh my God, this lifelong friend of mine
Is now dying in front of me.
We've been through all this stuff together.
After he just saved my life and everyone else's
life. He saved everyone's life, and that's where the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. Mm-hmm. And he says, you have been and always will be my friend, which is like so great, because it was such like the most emotion that Spock had ever shown.
And it was built upon a lifetime of adventures and episodes and everything. Like, it was a whole career friendship.
So I don't know how I feel about that quite. I don't know.
It was cheap, is what it was, is it was cheap. It was cheap, and it was also, the other thing that cheapened it too, is everything was rushed for like, kind of like a, this pop culture-y like type of, we gotta rush everything, okay. I mean, it took two movies for Spock to die and then to be brought back with the Genesis device. Now, it was done in about 10 to 15 minutes with magic blood.
This is what
I'm like, oh my God, that blood can cure death and heal everything.
Well, the minute they showed the blood thing, I was like, all right, well, this is going to save someone. And then when I'm like, there's no way they're going to kill Kirk. And I was like, oh, that's right, the magic blood.
Yeah. And then I'm like, well, then why would you freeze him? Wouldn't you just use that blood to cure all the ills in society? Just let him keep making blood.
Yeah.
It cures everything.
I know.
Even death.
I mean, it felt very much like a...
Deus ex machina.
Yeah,
it's like, all right, well, we can't write ourselves
like
out of this.
Superman just gonna go spins the earth back and redoes everything. And it's just like, and that stuff.
Oh God, yeah. Weller's daughter with the British accent.
Here's the thing. Here's what I want to talk about with that too. Well, first of all, okay, Cumberbatch is a great villain,
fantastic,
but to play specifically Khan. Ricardo Montalban was so good in that character.
Yeah, he was.
And again, it's what you were talking about, how, again, fun movie, entertaining, but this stuff, they really need to put more effort into.
Yes.
Because
sloppy.
Exactly. That's the word for it, sloppy. It was so, in Wrath of Khan, which, by the way, you're going to go on, that's the greatest Star Trek movie ever made.
Yes.
And so for you to, like, just sort of graze over it
or just grab the cliff notes of it
is a little like, okay. So I want to say that like Ricardo Montalban, you sympathized with him because the Federation kind of fucked him over,
and you saw how he and his people were living on this desolate planet
with this awful bug that killed his wife. When he gives that story, when he's putting the bug in Paul Winfield and Chekhov's ear, and he's telling the story about what it does, you see the rage he has, because underneath most anger in life is pain. It right. killed his wife. They were supposed to live in this utopia. And I'm sure he's got decades stacked on top of the first couple months and years of him going, well, the Federation's going to save us. They'll come and nope, they don't give a shit about
me. Yeah, he didn't just wake up.
Yeah, he wasn't just born evil. Mm-hmm. And so the Cumberbatch thing, you know, his con, again, these are all, I like all of these, everyone, all these actors are good.
And if he had more to work with, he could have done even more with it. You know, flesh out these characters more.
He didn't, exactly. We knew everything about Khan. We knew he was a superhero. We knew he had all this pain, and he was blinded by decades of pain that fueled this crazy vengeance.
Right.
And to have Spock go, Khan, is almost like they were doing a sketch.
Yeah, it did. It looked like a sketch. It really did.
I was like, I really like this movie. I'm like, don't fucking put this shit in there. Like, it just...
You know what it looked like, too? It looked like people that really didn't understand. Here's the thing. I think, like I said, I was talking about before, broad strokes, you know, Abrams always gets it right. It's when you get into the details that things really fuck up. Like, and one of the things, too, you look at, he understands big popcorn-type movies and science fiction, but he doesn't understand the Star Trek universe. And that's one of the things you would never see. The other thing you would never see, and it gets back to, is an evil starship admiral. Oh. You would never see that, because the whole premise that Gene Roddenberry based Star Trek on is that we've gotten through all that shit.
We're done with all that crap.
We're done with all the shit, this infighting and, you know, me being ruthless with my fellow man, and that's
and just a warmonger.
A warmonger, exactly. That's the whole point, is that we're done. This is the birth of Starfleet is the end of that era in humanity.
Yeah.
And that was the quintessential principle that Roddenberry built Star Trek.
That's why the Prime Directive was so...
Right.
And I think it was funny...
And why did he steal that scroll?
That made no sense.
why did he
steal never explained that. I think it's funny that they were showing the fact that, you know, Picard was so adamant about the Prime Directive, and that was a funny thing that like... You know, Kirk never gave a shit about the Prime Directive. He never, and so I think that's funny that they're showing young Kirk not giving a shit about the Prime Directive,
right.
and living by this off of the seat of his pants, and I like all that. The first movie was a reboot, and it needed J.J. Abrams' broad strokes, as you talked about.
Uh-huh.
This movie needed fine points.
Oh, couldn't agree more. Yeah, yeah. When, on the first one, you're like, okay, I get it. You're setting it up. You know, everything's kind of forgivable. Now we're in the second one. You got to pay attention more to the details, which was not done.
And it didn't. The second one felt like, again, it was done by somebody that didn't get the universe, like you said. Like the broad strokes, oh, they got all the jokes, and I'm a doctor, not a blah blah blah. Like that was funny in the first one. But this one, they had way too many scenes that were wacky. And going,
someone in a meeting went very dismissively, yeah, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, this
that's
one.
What, no, that's no. what it felt like. Yeah, yeah, I get it.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
get it. I got it.
No, I yeah. get it. I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah nerds. Like
yeah,
it was
yeah. exactly.
It was like the first Mission Impossible movie where John Voight went rogue. You know, and it was like, again, that would never happen.
No, you got to stay true to the world.
Stay true to the world. And like, okay, and this is where, again, your use of the word sloppy is so accurate. Clearly, they were trying to do what Gene Roddenberry used to do. And we talked about this in the regular episode, of using science fiction and the Star Trek universe to parallel things that are going on in our universe.
Yes.
So clearly, they're trying to make some point about, oh, warmongers who, you know, there's an enemy and we got to do something about it. Okay. But this, and again, I like Peter Weller. He played a bad guy well. Mm-hmm. It just didn't fit. And again,
It wasn't a Star Trek movie.
And going to that thing, this is what I was talking about with my friend who I saw the movie with, going to the issue of...
Was it Micah?
No, it wasn't Micah. I'd still be there talking to him if it was Micah. Is that, you know, we talked about in the regular episode about there was just this lack of women being represented.
Yes.
The one thing I wish I would have, I said to my friend, I was like, well, if you're going to have this admirable that's gone rogue, wouldn't it have been great if it was her mom? Like, wouldn't it like, if
yeah, twist it.
If that's the point you want to make, is like absolute power corrupts absolutely
everybody.
It corrupts everybody. Mm-hmm. So in this future world where women are just as equal as men and have just as many positions of power, oh, this woman goes nuts and she's threatened.
Yeah, Peter Weller looks like he could go rogue at any minute.
Yeah, he always looks like he's a RoboCop that's going to be reprogrammed.
Yeah, yeah.
So
what are you doing on that ship?
You know,
Father.
Yeah. What, hello.
May I have some tea before you beam me aboard?
Well, maybe she's from China.
Yeah.
Where he's from. So, yeah, that whole thing.
I was never going to save your crew.
Yeah.
Now you're a ruthless killer now, too?
Yeah, I know. You're going to kill, you're going to wipe out an entire, like, he's just a madman. And it's like, you know, again, it's sloppy. In, I believe it's Star Trek 4.
The whales.
No, 3 was Search for Spock. Which was the one where which was the one where Kirk is on trial? In the Klingon court.
Oh, Jesus. I think it has the word peace in it.
Yeah.
Final Frontier.
Final Frontier, right. It is a Final Frontier. There's that great scene where, I'm going to bring that up. First Contact.
No, that's the Borg one.
Final Frontier. Anyway, there's
maybe they change the name. Sometimes they change the
Star Trek 5.
Okay. Yeah, there is Final Frontier.
No, that's not the one.
It's, the Final Frontier. They're trying to make peace with the Klingons. And there's that scene. I think I know which one you're talking about. Right. You know, that scene where Spock is like, Jim, they're dying, the Klingons. And Kirk just goes, let them die.
Yeah, there's that great scene where, and I forget the actor's name, who was in To Killing Mockingbird, who played the guy.
Robert Duvall?
No, yeah. Boo Radley. No, that character actor who played Tom, the black guy that was on trial in To Killing Mockingbird, and his name isn't on the IMDb page. But anyway, they're screaming his name right now. Anyway, there's that great scene where he's like, Klingons are the scourge of the galaxy. And I'm like, that's Gene Roddenberry saying, you know, look how far we've come, and yet look at what racism can do. You know what I mean? Right. We're in the future where we're all equal. There's no skin color, but now the human race is racist against another alien race.
Right.
So that's a great point. And it's like they were trying to do that, but again, they were sloppy with
unbelievably sloppy. The other thing they were sloppy with was Kirk's character. It's like, okay, you can, he's like a guy that, okay, he's a hothead. He, you know, runs off, you know, half-cocked. And then, then he learns some morality and some humility. And then, it's gone again in the next scene. Now he hasn't learned anything. Wait, so what's he learning now? Now he's learned it? No, now he hasn't learned it. Now all the other people around him have to tell him what to do. Oh, no, wait, now it goes back and forth. Like, there's no arc with this character. It's just whatever fits the situation is what the dialogue that they wrote for.
It's funny. All of Matt Weinhold's criticisms of the first one,
I think apply here.
Apply to this one.
Yeah.
Because
except for the drill.
I feel like, you know, exactly. Like, I was like, I need to start seeing Kirk.
Yeah.
Like, come into his own a little bit. Right. You know what I mean?
I need to see this character arc. I don't want to see the caricatures of these characters. I mean, we saw them introduced, and I thought they did a fantastic job in the first one with introducing these characters and getting the characters right. I'm like, oh, great. But now it was like, it even looked like, which is funny because they're not that young, but it looked like Star Trek 90210 on that bridge.
Yes.
And the funny thing is, they're not all that young. You know, like, Carl Urban is not in his 20s, that's for sure. But they all looked really young because Kirk and Zachary Quinto both look young. Like, on the board, on the first bridge of the Star Trek Enterprise and on Next Generation, it looked like all adults. All adults were there because they were officers. They had been through their careers. And, like, you can't just throw younger versions of these characters in here unless they're cadets. You know, then if you're going to make them look that young, you got to make them cadets.
I mean,
it makes no sense that, you know, he would have that, a starship at his age or the way they're making him out to be, like, fresh out of the academy. The other thing that drove me nuts was the old Spock cameo. I was so angry at that. And I'm going to tell you why. Because the whole theme of the movie, Into Darkness, is about, like, going into that darkness of not knowing what to do.
Right.
Like that kind of like, I don't, you know, this is new. I'm trying to make these correct decisions. I don't know what to do. It's complicated. And then I'm like, well, why don't I just call my magic mirror and then ask?
I know.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, this is the theme of the movie, but no, I'll just ask future self, what should I do? And it's like a mirror, mirror on the wall. And then I love the camera was like, you know, I told you I'll never tell you what to do, but here's what you should do.
Yeah, but here's this, but this one time.
Yeah, this one time I think you should stop Khan. And now, I will say there was a much better way to do that cameo. If you want to just do a cameo for cameo's sake, you make it a character moment. You make it something that's does fan service and also is entertaining. Like I would have had them play like three level chess. You know, him and his future self playing three level chess. And you might have like a joke like younger Spock is like, hey, you know, this isn't very fun. He goes, trust me, it'll catch on.
Oh, that's funny.
Like something like that, but you have like a small character moment that with them playing chess and you get the cameo in, but it doesn't hinge on a critical plot point of not being able to understand or pick the correct destiny. You can't, not everyone can ask their future self what to do.
I know. And this is where they just throw in, like, was Alice Eve, and I like her as an actress, was she put in there just to wear her underwear in that one
yes,
scene?
Yes, that's exactly why she was put in, to wear her underwear.
And it's just like, I didn't quite get that character. And again, it was like a missed opportunity because
why was she taking her clothes that she was changing? Right.
Yeah. Why did she have to take her clothes off right there? Like, I mean, that was the whole that started to bug me. The whole like, there's no strong women in here. It's like the Federation is regressed now in terms of its equality standards and stuff. And I
her underwear didn't look very futuristic either.
Yeah, I know. And they're in these dance clubs where they're just listening to basic DJ music. Like music hasn't evolved at all.
No.
So 80 years ago, were people listening to DJs when they went to nightclubs in the, you know, in the 30s or whatever? No, they weren't.
Another missed opportunity of like, you could make some elaborate alien, you know, DJ setup where it's like virtual. You could do anything.
Wouldn't you like to just sit there? Because obviously, like you said, it was lazy. They didn't sit down and go, okay, where's music going to be 250
years
from
What's
now?
The science of everything that we're doing?
Where is this going? How is it going to progress? If we were to ask scientists and musicians, where do you think?
And let me also mention this about the original Star Trek shows. And the Star Trek shows, even up to Next Generation, the ones above, they had a team of technical scientists that were advisors. And what would happen is every single script would go through and there would be spaces in the script for like the nomenclature of something or the way something would work. And there would be a notation in the script that just say tech. And then what it would happen is it would go to the tech team and they would actually fill in all the scientific details of how something worked. And this is something that this movie was sorely missing. Every time there was a rule, it was broken by something dumb.
Well, and the movies, the old movies always did that too. Like that scene where they're getting the whales and Scotty is, you know, hello computer.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And he gives
a keyboard.
Them future,
how quaint.
Yeah, yeah. And he gives them future technology. And that one, the current day scientist goes, what is, like, how did you enjoy it, laddie, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, in that same episode where Chekhov gets injured and they're going to cut his head off, he's like, what is this, the Dark Ages?
Yeah,
and he just puts that future thing that heals his molecules or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I know everyone listening goes, boy, Chris and Graham hate this movie. It was still a fun movie.
Yeah.
But
you know what makes us angrier sometimes? A missed opportunity. It wasn't a bad movie, but it could have been so much better if just a little bit more effort and attention to detail went in. And that's actually sometimes gets us angrier than if the movie was bad.
Right, because J.J.
Because you were so close.
J.J. Abrams is a very good filmmaker.
Yeah.
I like his movies. He does entertaining stuff. It was perfectly cast. It's just
well acted.
Mm-hmm. Get rid of the guy, the team that wrote the fucking Transformer movies.
Yeah,
get them out of there.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, they blow. Get these assholes, Roberto Orci and Alex Kurtzman. Get them out. And Lindelof, loved you on Lost. Get a scientist to take over this goddamn job. You know, I'm sorry, but this is the change that needs to happen.
We were talking about before. Get actual science fiction writers.
Get science fiction writers in there because you can't.
Is Harlan Ellison still alive? Is he?
Yeah.
Maybe he's a heel.
Are you going to keep? Because you can't just keep just cranking out these broad stroke summer movies.
Like, no, you can't. At some point, especially for a franchise, and here's what Iron Man actually did correctly: is it went deeper. yes. into the character and stay true to the mythology.
That's what you have to
do. I mean, granted, Kevin Pollak has a point about the suits flying on their own, but
sure.
but that's okay. Because this one, like Iron Man, paid more attention to the details of the characters.
But again, let's go back to Wrath of Khan. It took the 30 years of care. It put all the character. The criticism of the first Star Trek movie, the one that came out in the 80s, was it was boring and they didn't do anything fun. So they brought all the fun and excitement.
Right.
Which J.J. Abrams has down pat. Like the opening right. of this movie,
yep.
fucking loved yep. it. Like just shoot you out of a cannon. It was great.
You know, this kind of broke the trend of the Star Trek movies. The even ones are good and the odd ones
yeah, it's going to be the odd yeah. ones are going to be. If three is awesome, then the odd ones are...
But if you're new to the Star Trek franchise, especially the movies, first of all, watch the shows. Then yes. watch Wrath of Khan and then First Contact.
Yeah.
You'll see probably the two best Star Trek movies.
And watch Next Generation in terms of staying true to the world and the mythology.
Yeah, and that was that one, you know, Gene Roddenberry still had a hand in. And uh-huh. you could see the attention to detail in it. Now, the next one, Deep Space Nine, was a mixed bag. That one was really hit or miss. Some of the episodes that hit really hit nicely, but a lot of them were really kind of boring.
And Voyager was good because I like the casting of Kate Mulgrew. I think she was a good...
Yeah, that one was hit or miss, too.
It was hit or miss, yeah. But again, like, here's the things you got to fix. Modernize the equality issues of women in the human race on planet Earth. Fix that shit. No one in the Federation is bad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we've politics, sure. Have that. Have the politics of it. Great.
The other things, because if you get to the point of Starship Captain or even Admiral, you've been through a world of shit. You know, that's...
And like you said, though, this is a future where the human race got it
right. Got it together, yeah.
Figured it out. So you know. Don't ever forget that. It's not... This isn't the Blade Runner world.
Yeah, this is the very rare... view of the utopian view in science fiction. Yeah. A lot of it is dystopian.
Right.
I mean, you've got everything from Terminator, Blade Runner, uh-huh. everything goes the other way. So this is the one, you know, true utopian vision. I'm like, why are you going to fuck that up too?
And explore new worlds and go beyond. You know what I mean? That's that thing that they said at the beginning and end of every episode was that's your mantra. That should be the sort of mission statement of every movie you make.
And it was a metaphor for humanity.
Yeah.
It really was. And, you know, you look at even Next Generation really, really had that. Like, it ultimately, the character Q was pretty much like looking at the human race as like an experiment. And there were all these big, giant philosophical ideas throughout the Star Trek world, and
it's
you know,
that's this little goddamn machine that can just beam you across the galaxy.
Yeah,
knock
yeah.
that shit
I mean,
off.
It's you know, that's when it gets into like magic. You know, magic teleporter, magic transporter, magic blood. It's enough.
Again, you're right, because in the Star Trek universe, it was very clearly established. We can beam you anywhere. If there's something interfering with the beam,
we can't do it.
And so it was always such a great thing, like, oh, we're in a cave or we're too far below the surface.
And there's a distance.
Right.
That, you know, there's a maximum distance.
And that was the whole thing of, we're too far, we can't reach Starfleet Command. We're right. out in the middle of nowhere. Mm. That's what that thing was. It was this ship out in the middle of yeah. nowhere. It was Robinson Crusoe. Because you know this, Gene Roddenberry... pitched, he goes, it's Robinson Crusoe in space. And ABC went, oh, that's a good idea, but nah, I don't know. Then Lost in Space came out. That was Gene Roddenberry's idea. They fucking stole it from him. And that would have broken most people. Oh, show business is evil. Nope. Then he wrote Star Trek. So and he put some of those elements in there.
You know what the production company was for Star Trek too?
Who?
It was Lucy and Desi.
Yeah.
It was a Desilu.
Yeah, Desilu Productions. Mm-hmm. And so you got to really understand the lineage of what you're making here.
Right.
You know, it is very...
And what made it so appealing.
Right.
Every element, not just, oh, I got it. You know, you can't just pick and choose.
Yeah.
All of those elements have to be in there to be Star Trek.
And it predicted the cell phone in the late 60s. The communicator, that's a cell phone.
Yeah.
It predicted so many of these things. And so, you know, Gene Roddenberry was ahead of his time.
Right.
And don't forget that, J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, and everything worked together. I mean, things got a little crazy when they created a holodeck, but even that had rules.
Right.
You know, even that, it started to, you know, even when they broke that rule a bit, they spent time, like, here's how we could break it, or here are the rules for breaking the rules. Like, a good example is the holodeck. Nothing can leave the holodeck. Okay. Well, now we found a mobile holodeck emitter, so the doctor from the one series can actually go. Right. But it was... You know, there was still that attention to detail even when they broke a rule. So, but it wasn't just a random fucking thing like, oh God, just that was going on in this movie, like magic blood, you know. And it's one thing if it has healing properties, but it's like now it's resurrection blood. It's
yeah,
pretty much.
And all right, let's be honest here. As much as I love the miniskirt, just as a general principle, as a man, they would never have, women would never be wearing miniskirts. The current American military does not have women in goddamn miniskirts.
Yeah, see, here's where I disagree. I think as humanity gets it together, we as a society realize the value of the miniskirt and we thrust it into the future.
Oh, good point. Excellent point. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, don't discount the value.
Man has overcome animalistic urges and can watch a woman in a miniskirt, no problem. Unless you're Kirk.
Yeah.
Then he's banging two girls. He had that three-way he had with the two girls with the tail.
Yeah, now that was okay.
That
I
was
like that.
Fine.
Yeah,
that was
playing.
But again,
you could see Kirk as a young man doing that
easily. Of course. The whole reason Kirk got into the Federation was to chase tail around the galaxy. That's the only reason he did it. Mm-hmm. But we need to start seeing Chris Pine play Kirk. He needs to be the older version of it. He needs to be the more mature, wiser. I mean, Kirk was always a hot shot and a gunslinger, even in the TV series, but he wasn't a reckless kid.
Right. And that's where we haven't seen the evolution yet.
We haven't seen. And there was very little of that evolution in this second one. There needed to be more.
No, it even went backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, you've learned nothing in two movies.
Yeah. And as Matt Weinold said, like Chris Pine was paying it way over the top. Like, whoa, girls. Whoa. Yeah. You know, Kirk was never like that. Kirk was always just like, this is how we make love on my planet. You know, like he would always swoop in and just show everybody, well, Nungani, when a man and a woman.
He would bring his own disco ball.
Oh, he would always. These girls are always like, remember those episodes? Would always be like, Kirk, what is kissing?
Yeah, well, Nungani. Oh, let me explain.
As my shirt gets ripped in yet another episode. Yeah.
Perhaps a demonstration is in order.
So, you know... And we'd love to hear your guys' comments on this because as you know, people have been watching Star Trek since we were kids, we're going to expect a lot.
Yeah.
We gave JJ a lot of latitude on the first one. It's kind of what Kevin Pollak was talking about, what we talked about before in the show about expectations. I didn't have huge expectations for the first movie in 2009 because I was just like, oh, great.
Yeah, whatever. This franchise has been dead for years. Yeah. Let's see what somebody new can do with it.
So now you have to prove a little more. Like,
right.
Like, your rookie season's over. You got to deliver.
I agree. And like we said before, we didn't hate the movie. It's not a bad movie. It just, it really fell short. It could have been a lot better.
And the ending... I'm glad that they...
Oh, you mean the Indiana Jones ending when they put the crate into the warehouse?
Yeah, that... All right, I'm glad that they... Here's the thing I liked about the ending. I liked that the Enterprise didn't get blown up. I liked that it was the other ship that got blown up, that Peter Weller was making in secret, you know, which, again, a Starfleet Admiral would never do that. I'm glad that the Enterprise didn't get blown up. It just got banged around, which is fine. And I'm glad that they ended the whole thing with...
It got shot a lot.
Like, but I am glad that they were like, we're going on a 5-year mission to boldly go where no man has gone before. And I'm glad that's how they ended it because it's like, good. Now let's just do it. Just do the series, but do it the right way. The keeping of the con people, the superhuman people in the pods, and they're just, like you said, the Indiana Jones ending... I have mixed feelings about that because it's like, are they going to just, so they can just keep tapping into these people? Anytime somebody dies, they can just tap in there, zap out their blood and.
Yeah. Don't even wake them up. Just they'll wake up with track marks.
Yeah. It's just like a bunch of junkies. So I don't know. I don't know. I had fun at the movies, but when I start thinking about it, there's the things
then
that,
it starts to unravel.
Yeah, it starts to bother me a little bit. So that's, I don't know. That's,
I had the same exact reaction.
Yeah, overall about the ending, you thought what?
I meant overall about the movie.
But I mean, specifically the ending.
The ending, it was, again, it goes back to the sloppiness of the writing. It's like, all right, well, what else, you know, it felt like, well, what else are we going to do? You know,
right.
Kind of like there was nothing creative or interesting about the ending. It was just bland. Like I wanted to see maybe do something more interesting. Maybe he does get away with his, you know, and he goes to that planet. Maybe that's like, you know, we lost him. You know, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to have to keep an eye out for him. We'll try to take things over.
Right.
Or he, you know, you could even set something up like maybe he escaped to the Klingon homeworld, or he was killed to some giant fiery death. Something other than just putting him back in his pod.
I know.
Been
a with
a
smile
better.
On his face.
Yeah, yeah. So that kind of thing, there was a lot more things you could have done, and even more risks. You could have made a riskier ending, too, that was a little more edgy or controversial, but at least it would have felt a little more organic, like if something would have happened. Like,
and you've made, we said this in the regular episode, but it bears repeating. You've made, Zoe Saldana's a great choice for Uhuru. You've made her strong and tough, and I love the fact that her and Spock have a thing. But that fucking stupid scene where she's like, you didn't think about us when
you didn't play.
She would never do that.
Well, no.
Uhuru would never do that. So stop writing.
I understand that scene was played for laughs, like we were talking about, but it didn't work.
Yeah. It doesn't work, and she wouldn't do that. So that's stupid. Like, yeah. And in fact, the real Uhura, you know, like Uhuru was always had her shit together. You know what I mean? She was a calm, cool customer. Like, and I like that Zoe brings some. You know, she plays, Zoe Saldana is very good at playing women that are strong, that do have like a vulnerable side to them, but keep it on the strong side of the table, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
No, I think we pretty much covered it.
We covered it, you guys. And on the message boards and on the Facebook page, love to hear what you have to say about this.
Oh, let me mention this too, if you're listening to this. We are kind of revamping the message boards a little bit. They're a little constrictive right now with the way the categories and stuff are. We're working on fixing that. We have a board moderator, and he's going to actually be changing a lot of that, so there'll be more flexibility with threads and topics and stuff. So that's coming. It just takes us a little while to do everything, but that's, you know. And again, this was also from your feedback. You know, a lot of times, you know, we're stretched a little thin. So if there's something that you guys want to see or change, you know, a lot of times an email to us will actually get it going. Like our board moderator emailed us and said, you guys need a board moderator. And we're like, all right, you want to do it?
Yeah, you're here. You got the job.
Yeah, sure.
You're hired, kid.
Yeah. So that's one of the things we wanted to say, too. We always appreciate you guys' feedback, and it's because of the feedback that we try to make everything better.
Yeah, yeah. Constructive feedback.
Yeah, yes.
Bitchiness. We're not fans of that. Whiny, complaininess. No, but hey, this is cool, or try this, or this is a good idea, or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So love to hear what you guys have to say about it. So that's it. I'm Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini, and thanks for supporting the spoiler episodes.
And remember, live long and prosper.